Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace as we head into yet another long weekend. Hope you survived the last one. And whatever your plans for this big weekend, particularly if they're in the UK, I hope you've got it all sorted and it does not involve drink. Honestly, if I see another goddamn bottle of Coronation Gin to go with the quiche, I'll go crazy. It just is bizarre how we just link every single occasion has to be kind of wrapped around booze. I know I used to do it. Of course I did. It was absolutely my default position back in the day. Like, oh, bank holiday, I can start drinking at 11 o'clock, you know, and nobody will notice because they're all doing it around me. It is just odd. One of my lovely friends who has a place in Spain was saying that she's been sober for, she wrote a lovely post on the Sober Club just saying how grateful she is for her sobriety and just how it is literally the new normal. She doesn't have to think about it anymore. It just is the way she is. But she's reminded when she's in Spain, she met other friends who live out there, and there's the whole obviously kind of expat community who basically admit that their retirement is just a great excuse to have the cheap Spanish plonk and, in inverted commas, enjoy life. Actually, as she points out, it's a complete waste of life, isn't it? Literally a waste of life. You're missing out on all the other stuff that you could be doing and waking up early and feeling fantastic and probably having an awful lot more years of your life. Why would you want to miss any of that for the sake of cheap booze or any booze? Come to that. There's been a lot of talk this week. There's been a lot of gratitude this week in the Sober Club. I've noticed so many posts around how grateful people feel to have that freedom. And that's what it is. It's just incredible freedom when you ditch the booze. It really is. We are going to be talking about such an interesting topic today. We're going to be discussing ADHD and how it may or may not link to alcohol as well. That will, you know, comes into it a little bit. As I'm sure you're aware, it stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And what I hadn't realised is that the number of people it affects, I mean, they say it affects around 5% of the population. And, you know, they say that it can make it really challenging for people to focus, to regulate emotions, to control impulses. And studies have shown that people with ADHD are more likely to develop substance abuse issues, so alcohol, other drugs or whatever, it is more likely. In fact, I saw some research after interviewing Carol, our guest, which showed that individuals with ADHD are twice as likely to develop an alcohol use disorder than those without the condition. That's scary, isn't it? And of course, not everyone knows whether they do have ADHD or, you know what's going on. They don't have a diagnosis and maybe they don't even have a suspicion. But there's definitely been more people talking about it in recent years, of course. There are some celebs who famously talk about their living with ADHD. Adrian Charles, I know, who, of course, talks about his issues with drink as well. Lily Allen, similarly, who's now sober, as far as I know. Trying to think who else talks about it. Denise Welsh, of course. Denise Welsh speaks very openly about her struggles with depression and ADHD. So, yeah, there's a link for sure. And I just thought, you know, it'd be really good to have a chat about this, but not just, oh, isn't it terrible? Let's actually look at some positives and look at how it links to how we can, you know, support those traits with really good nutrition, which is where the link with, you know, stopping drinking comes in anyway, because of course there are going to be some lifestyle factors that mean we can, we can cope better, because it still is rather an overlooked topic. Ant McPartlin, yeah, that's who I was trying to think of. Ant, as in Ant and Dec, has spoken about his struggles with ADHD. So anyways, I'll be chatting to Carol May, who is an ADHD health coach. She also works with people who have disordered eating issues going on. So it's an interesting one. And if you're thinking, oh, that's not really me, please stay tuned, because in this interview, we talk about a lot of stuff that's generic. So whether or not you have ADHD, or you have anyone in your life who does, a lot of these tips really will kind of refer to us all. That some of the lifestyle stuff, it's important, whatever is going on in our lives. Just before we do that, I want to give you a reminder that we have Family Constellations coming up, and I'm constantly getting great feedback from these sessions. It really is just amazing work. And you know, if you're listening to the podcast for the first time, you probably don't know what the hell it even is. So go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, click on Family Constellations, and have a read of some of the testimonials, see if you can get a little bit of a sense of what it might be about. But bear in mind, ultimately, you just have to come and experience it, because it's not the easiest thing to describe. And it's better just to come and experience it. Come with an open heart. You'll definitely leave with an open heart. People definitely leave feeling so much more compassionate. So we have a day on Friday, 12th of May. This is, I work with a trauma expert, Rafe Nowen. And so Friday, 12th of May, we have a small group session in Hertfordshire, and that's from 11 till 4. And it would be great to a few places on that one. It'd be great to see you on that one. We've got a couple of young people coming on that one as well. It's great to have a fantastic mix of ages. But we've got a couple of young people coming on that. So just in case you have young adults in your life who might be interested in this, but maybe they're thinking, oh, I'm not going because everyone will be old. Well, they aren't on this one. We've got a couple of young adults definitely attending. So just drop me a message if you're interested in that one at Janie Lee Grace, or find me from the Sober Club, and I'll send you the payment info. And then the next one that has its own sort of little landing page, as it were, is Saturday 20th of May, and that one is in York. So that one runs from 10:30 till 5:30. So it'd be fantastic to see you at one of these. I don't know when the next ones will be, other than possibly an online one for those of you who are not in the UK. But if you can come, please do. There's something very magical about constellations. It's very safe, non-judgmental space to be in. And it really is worth making that effort. So Friday, 12th of May in Hertfordshire, or Saturday, Friday, 12th of May in Hertfordshire, or Saturday, 20th of May in York. And just drop me a message if you want more information. I must remind you too that Friday, the 12th of May at 7:45 p.m., we have our Sober Guys Talking. You might have heard the podcast last week with Paul Briley and Tony Ward, still a couple of our Sober Club coaches. And they're hosting this event with a few other guys. It'll be very low-key, very informal. Everyone's welcome. But please do invite the guys in your life who might not usually rock up and talk about stuff. You don't have to be a Sober Club member for this one. It's open to anyone. It's just about getting guys talking about the stuff that goes on for them around alcohol. So it doesn't matter if you are sober curious, or you know, maybe just thinking, is it maybe time just to cut down or quit the booze? Or maybe you've been sober for years and you'd love to join in. So you do have to register for this. It's on Zoom. You have to register, but there's no payment and you don't have to be a Sober Club member. So again, if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll see that little picture there for the Sober Guys Talking event. And if you register there, you'll get the Zoom link sent to you, and it'll be lovely to have you involved. And there's another Sober by the Sea coming up as well. That's early July, I think. So again, all under the events page. If you are not a Sober Club member, by the way, I know I always say this, but honestly, what have you got to lose? It's a very small amount of money per month. And I haven't put it up, even though every single goddamn thing, have you noticed? Every single goddamn thing has gone up. What is going on? Everything you go to buy has gone up. But the Sober Club remains the same. And it is the price of, you know, well, in these prices. probably a couple of glasses of wine a month. That's it, really. So, so it'd be great to have you as part of the Sober Club. Of course, you can leave whenever you want. The amount of content in there is just absolutely huge. And you can be very much part of our group that's associated with it or not just consume all the materials in the online course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. And we have regular meetups on Zoom. It's just a huge amount of value. And it would be great to be able to share that with you if it resonates. It's thesoberclub.com if you're interested in membership. Or you could join for a month and then you get 2 months free and a complimentary coaching call. I mean, really, what's not to like, seriously? Well, I'm really thrilled to be able to discuss a topic that I don't think I've actually covered before, which is really surprising. On all the shows that I've done over the years, I actually don't think I've really looked at the topic of ADHD. So I'm really pleased to be able to look at this from a holistic perspective as well. So really chuffed to be able to welcome Carol May. Thank you so much, Carol, for agreeing to chat to me.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Janie.
Yeah, well, I saw a little bit of the stuff that you were doing on social media, and I saw just a little bit of your work. And uh-huh. I don't know much about what you do. I'm sure you'll share it with us. But just the fact that I know that nutrition is a very big part of what you talk about was enough for me to think, okay, this is the right expert to talk to. Before we get into any of that, first of all, just tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into the ADHD piece. So, yeah, tell us your story.
Yeah, so I originally trained as a home economist and nutritionist, and then I retrained in midlife, like so many women do. And and I became a weight loss counsellor and eating disorders therapist. But along the way, I was diagnosed with ADHD in my mid-40s. I'm now late 60s. And at a time when women were not diagnosed, girls and women were not diagnosed.
Is that right? Even as children, young adults, so much? Or
just not diagnosed. I know this because my sister worked in this area, and still does, I might add, with families. But so her work was around the fact that there was no support for her as a parent. And her son. And we all thought it was just boys.
Right. Wow.
And that's where this thing about it's just children being naughty
comes from. Yes, of course. Of course. You do hear that. Yeah. Totally crazy. Yeah. Okay. So it's really interesting then, because, you know, this is what kind of prompted me to have this conversation, because obviously, as you know, I've been aware of children, you know, lots of friends who have children, and you're right, a lot of them boys. But it's only fairly recently that I've become aware that people are diagnosed when they're older. One of my close friend got a diagnosis in her early 40s, and then I came across another friend, and I suddenly started to realize, hold on a minute, this is a thing for sure.
Definitely a thing. So
let's just take it back a bit then for people who don't know. No reason why we should all know. Tell us what ADHD is, and how it, you know, how it manifests, particularly in adults.
So ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And it was originally thought that girls didn't have it because we weren't physically hyperactive. So we were labelled as ADD. It's right. Just attention deficit disorder. That's all gone now. We all have ADHD because it's our brain that's hyperactive. So I can remember saying to my ADHD coach, I said, today it feels like my brain is bouncing off the inside walls of my head. And so although I'm not physically, although I do wave my arms around a lot when I speak, I'm not physically hyperactive. Mentally, my brain is going at 100 miles an hour all the time. So it manifests differently in different people and in men and women and boys and girls. So, and that's the problem. It's not like saying, oh, you have I don't know, ovarian cancer or something. There is that they're not, there are, you know, there's a long list of traits you could have, but it's very rare that you have them all. And then we also all have a mix of usually many also have, they might have dyspraxia, dyslexia, and a level of autism on top of that.
Right.
So, and then there's ODD, which is oppositional. I call it oppositional defiant disorder. I don't think it's defiant, but it is. It's about basically going, no, I'm not doing that.
Right.
You know, it's when a child goes, no, just no.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of adults do it as well. I do it now.
Yeah. But so is that a disorder though, or is that just that you've made a feisty decision?
Exactly.
Right.
So,
okay.
That's a gray area, but the ADHD doesn't usually come on its own.
Right.
There is a variety of other issues that come. and it could include depression and anxiety. Mm. It will, with women, it will always include masking, so that we're trying to fit in. So we try and be as normal, in inverted commas, as possible, to fit in with those around us, because we want to belong. You know, women naturally want to be in a tribe.
Yeah.
But belong.
Some of the things you've described, so I'm going to ask some questions that probably sound really ignorant, right?
No,
it's
carry
probably
on.
Better if I do that, because
absolutely,
I know there'll be
Janie,
other people
yes.
thinking them. But so some of those things you've described, you know, would be symptoms that we all experience. I have loads of times when my brain is going 100 miles an hour. I definitely can be defiant, you know. You know, and yes, there are many, many women who are people pleasers, but they don't all have ADHD.
No,
so
they don't.
Given that you can't give us a completely common denominator, and I understand that, I suppose I'm asking what is it something that is it a chemical imbalance of the brain? Is it something that you would have, you know, that would come on later in life, or that you'd always have, but you don't realize you have it?
You'll have always had it.
Right.
And in women, because the way our hormonal system works, it can get worse.
Okay, I see. Which is why sometimes you don't present till you get older. I see.
Yes. So the level of estrogen that we have affects our brain function.
Right.
And that's just that's a very simple way of describing it, but it does, which obviously men don't have. So men tend to be on a much more even keel. So what they are like as a boy, it tends to go through. They will still have similar traits. So for instance, my son isn't diagnosed. I don't know if he has ADHD or not, but he has a lot of traits which are kind of, I'm thinking, okay, he might have. He's 40 now, right? When he was a child, he wasn't disruptive in school. He was always the good boy. Does that mean he hasn't got ADHD? I don't know. He runs 4 businesses. That's very typical of an ADHDer, to have multiple businesses. You know, we tend to, our executive functioning is affected. Our brain does not function in the same way. It's not wired in the same way. So there are a few, there's a long list. If you go online, you can self-diagnose if you want to. And I think there's a list of about 20, maybe more questions now. When you are diagnosed by a psychiatrist, it's a 2-hour conversation, and you've already filled in the questionnaire, and the questionnaire would have taken you 3 days to fill in.
Right.
You know,
so if you were to rock up to a kind of a you know, a regular GP or whatever,
they can't do it.
Okay, they can't do it. So right, okay. So where, you know, what I suppose my question then would be, as I say, I have a friend who was diagnosed in her 40s mm-hmm. and I came across another friend. I've had a couple of sober club members who've said to me, oh my God, you know, I've been diagnosed recently. One person said, it actually, now I've been diagnosed, it explains everything to me about the last 18 years. Mm-hmm. She said, particularly the disorganization and the sense of failure. Which is interesting. And then other people have mentioned how it can have such a strong association with drinking too much, of course, and various other things, seeking for dopamine, all the rest of it, which we'll talk about in a moment. But before we get to that, so I suppose my question is, should one be diagnosed then if you think you have these traits? Why is it just that, as that member said, then it will kind of go, then you can kind of go, oh God, that explains it.
That to me is one, that's the best reason for me as far as I'm concerned. A lot of people want to be diagnosed so that they'll get the medication and they think they'll be fixed,
right?
Or they'll get the medication and they think it will solve their problem. And for some people, it does, right? It absolutely does. But it doesn't, the medication now is, I don't know what is specifically allowed in the UK. I know the US allows a lot of different, there's two different types of medication, one based on amphetamine and one not. And so the US, they tend to have more available to them. Over here, we get both those two different types. But because of the NHS, there is an issue. So if you get diagnosed in the private sector, the NHS now, and this is new, it moves all the time, and now saying, no, we won't give you an NHS prescription for your medication. You have to pay for it.
Wow.
So you're talking, I don't know, 120, 150 quid a month just for your meds.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Now, and for some people, that's, you have to be titrated. It may take months and months to titrate you to a point where you are balanced. And I think probably the older you are, this is just my opinion, this isn't fact, it may get harder because our hormone levels are much more upsy-downsy. So other people go, no, I don't want the medication because I don't want it to flatten me in any way. I don't want to take pharmaceuticals. So they look at other ways, or they just look at coping strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. So, and again, another sober club member was asking, you know, what is the risk of treating ADHD with amphetamine medication? You know, what are the risks associated with that? I mean, no long term, medication comes without risk, does it? So,
doesn't, and you know. Back when I was training in eating disorders, I know we discussed appetite suppressants, which were all based on amphetamines. And I know how I used to be when I was taking weight loss appetite suppressant type drugs. And I know with my nephew that, you know, over periods of time, medication had an effect on his appetite. And you cannot be medicated 100% 24/7. You can't. So it wears off. And I have had conversations with people who go, well, you know, if I take my medication first thing in the morning, then it's running out by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Do I take another dose? I'm not supposed to. My psychiatrist says no. But then I fall off a cliff. You know, so there's, I think for different people, it affects you in different ways. I think the only way you're going to know is by trying it, if that's what you want to do. And so, you know, I'm a great believer in not telling people what to do. I just say, well, this is the information about it. And if you want to take medication and try it, go ahead. Let me know. I'd love to know more about your experience.
Yeah.
because, you know, there's so little data on women taking the medication.
Right. I mean, it's very interesting, you know, that you also do the work with eating disorders, because of course there is an association, isn't there, with people who are ADHD with eating disorders.
Yes.
Is that linked to that kind of the kind of dopamine kind of pathway, you know, using food for comfort and reward and all of that? Or I guess it's difficult to say, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there are two main eating disorders associated with ADHD. One is anorexia, is a whole different ballgame.
Of course.
Which I don't deal with. That has to be dealt with by a medical team. And for them, yes, it's all about control.
Right.
The other eating disorder is binge eating disorder,
right.
which is what I had. It's what I developed. And it's where we tend to have been dieters, like most women, quite frankly. And so if we can go all day without eating, we think that's a good day. But then suddenly the brain goes, hang on a second. Dopamine's running out. Your serotonin's getting real low. I need you to eat now. And I need you to eat a lot of stuff. So it gives you those cravings for sugars and processed carbohydrates.
Right.
And that's the problem, because the more you eat of that food, the more you want to eat. And so the binging starts. And then eventually, you know, you get to the point where you can't go a day without binging in the evening.
Yeah,
because
it
becomes that swing like a pendulum between the hyper focus all day, not eating, and then I'm going to close my laptop now, and I can eat anything I like, I haven't eaten all day, all of that sort of stuff. And so that is all about, it is all about dopamine. It is all about our hormones.
Really.
And, you know, the hormones and the neurotransmitters, which then give you the cravings for all of the food that we're told we shouldn't be eating.
Yeah, exactly. And the alcohol, of course, which will numb it all out for a bit.
Because that sugar, you know, it's the sugar in the alcohol as well.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow, honestly, what a thing. So when I work with people who want to stop drinking, you know, we always recommend that in the early weeks they major massively on good nutrition in order to support that brain chemistry piece. So, you know, as you know, when you first stop drinking, your serotonin, your dopamine, everything's out of whack, you know, your body's saying, where's my hit? You know, all of that's going on. It all needs to recalibrate. And one of the best ways we can do that, of course, is by putting in those really nutrient dense foods. So, you know, I always say to people, absolutely don't even think about fasting, or I don't care if you're normally 5'2", you know, whatever the hell. No, absolutely not. You know, 100% proper nutrient dense foods, protein with every meal, you know, and let's at least do that nutrition piece. So I'm guessing that's a similar way that you look at this, is that we've got to get those building blocks of nutrition.
So what I tend to suggest to my clients, and I am generally the kind of nutritionist that says you can eat anything you like. I'm an intuitive eating nutritionist. And that's my aim, is to get them to that point where they're so connected with themselves and themselves and their body that they eat only what they actually need. They listen to the messages, because your body has the wisdom, right? But initially, for the first 2 weeks, I say, right, okay, we are taking out completely carbohydrates and sugars. And they kind of look at me and I go, yeah, we're going to eat high protein, healthy fat with a few, you know, I mean, I will allow them a few berries to go with their Greek yogurt and that sort of thing. But it is basically to get them nutritionally dense. And I don't worry about how much they eat and what time of day they eat it. Because that's another thing that we we tend to be the types that we don't actually want breakfast. We don't want to eat. Our body and brain takes a while to wake up in the mornings.
Yeah.
It might just be my age, Janie, of course, but I mean, that's certainly what I've experienced lately, is that it takes much longer to wake up. And actually my digestion is never like breakfast, never, ever, ever. Mm. So I'm best waiting and I eat at lunchtime and but of course it's so ingrained in us that you have three meals a day and two snacks and, you know, only these many calories and, oh, but you can fast and all this sort of stuff. No, actually for a woman, no, just no, none of that.
Mm. Yeah, no. Absolutely.
All this stuff has only actually ever been tested on men and rats. So yeah. For women, you know, there is actually a doctor in America who is, she's doing some research into this, and it's really interesting how much our hormones drive everything for women.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what I was going to say. So I guess, you know, even when we get this piece relatively right around the nutrition, as we get older and then we kick into the sort of perimenopause and the menopause, I guess everything's shaken up again.
Yes, it is. It's like putting it all into a big drum and doing this with it. You know, turning it round again. And so you add into that mix the fact that ADHDers aren't great with focus. We're not great with meal planning. We're not great with actually going out to the kitchen and cook on our own. Mm. We actually need somebody, not necessarily in the kitchen with us, but in the house with us.
Do you know what? I saw a post that you did about this and I thought it was body so doubling. Fascinating. Body yeah. doubling. Do you know, yeah. I thought it was so fascinating because I've always, for me, I'm exactly like that. And I have a real problem doing certain things if there isn't someone else around. Isn't that interesting? Yes. I've never thought of that before.
Yes. And I used to think that was I was broken.
So sort of needed.
You know, I needed
yeah.
to be fixed. I was, yeah. you know, there was something wrong with me. But my dad was the same. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is interesting. But, you know, I recently, started a new love relationship. And it's made me really think how much it's been quite noticeable. Mm. When I cook for him, either here or at his house, how much different it is for me. Mm. How different I feel, how much more creative I am.
Yeah,
he's type 2 diabetic, so we actually eat similar foods, which is great. But I can get all creative. I can look in the fridge and da-da-da-da. Me on my own? Nah, no chance. Absolutely none. And yet it's not that I don't know how to cook, because I do. Mm. I've written cookery books. You know, I know how to do this stuff. It's just the way the brain works.
Right.
So I've learned how to... You know, I then have food in the fridge, which means that I can grab something. So it's not a meal as in our traditional sense, but it is good, dense nutritional food.
Yeah, sure. So I guess for everyone, you know, that who thinks they have this, or if they are diagnosed, as you say, they need to sort of, find ways that are going to work for them.
Yeah.
So that it is coping strategies, isn't it? It's finding the way you rock and making sure you can find ways to support that. And obviously good nutrition has to be the starting point.
Yes.
Absolutely has to be, doesn't it? So even if that doesn't come naturally to you, you've got to find a way, right? You have to find a way. Yeah,
you have
exactly.
to find a way.
And then what else is really important? Because I'm guessing, you know, there are other lifestyle things that are really going to support this. I mean, I would guess, you know, getting out into nature is it would make a massive difference.
Yeah. I mean, I discovered cold water while swimming.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I go with a friend of mine in the river locally, and it is, I can't describe the feeling I get when I get into that water. I'm not saying it's easy, mind, but you know, once I'm in, it's just, and then I get out and I am like, I am buzzing, but I'm calm.
So it's things that ground you, I suppose, are really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you know, I like to walk on grass in bare feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. You know, thankfully my son is a farmer, so I have access to green fields and things. But you know, but it is also working out. So, for instance, things for me, noise is a big thing. So noise cancelling headphones.
Yeah.
And I mean, proper noise cancelling headphones can be a lifesaver. You know, if you're traveling on a train, you know, I've got to go into London tomorrow and I'm thinking, I think I'll take my headphones with me. because just, you know, the clatter of the underground or something. And sometimes just here in the center of the town where I live, it can get really overwhelmingly noisy. And that then creates anxiety.
Right.
And you stop focusing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got a VA. I've got a VA who herself has ADHD. So, you know, she and I've got an accountability buddy. Mm. And the other thing I do is I talk about it. I feel.
I was just going to say, how much do you need to share? Because again, I think there's some similarities with when people stop drinking. You know, the other people's responses is a big factor. But
it is.
But I suppose, you know, there's a sense of how much do you want to sort of say, you know, in a social situation or even in a workplace situation, or well, actually, I've been diagnosed with ADHD or I've got ADHD, therefore, you know, I require this and this and this. Mm. And where's that fine line between seeming a bit entitled? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely get it. So I probably wouldn't start my sentences in that way, you know, and I think it's time that we all were tuned into what our needs were.
Mm.
And be able to say to people right now, that noise is affecting me, or right now, I can't do this thing you want me to do on the computer. You could say because I have ADHD or because my brain is tired or something, or there's so much in the work situation. Anyway, it's so much help now out there, tech programs and stuff. I mean, I have learned about using ChatGPT in the last week, and I'm going, oh my goodness, that's a lifesaver, because you just ask it questions and it goes
give the answer.
And you go, oh, that's really spooky. So it's about knowing what you need as a person.
And, which is actually not a bad basis for any of us, right? To actually I'm always saying to people, you know, particularly to women who are really not very good at the self-care piece, you know, that self-care isn't going off to your spa, it's knowing what your resources are, and particularly when people are stopping drinking, you've got to know what your resources are, what else is going to support you, you know, what else is it going to be. And often for many of us, we've spent so many years just focused on the minutiae of life, and you're going to work, caring for people, whatever it is. Sometimes I run my Sober by the Sea events, and I'll say to women, right, let's start with a question then. What do you want for you? And oh my God, the amount of times I've had, you know, several people crying at that question, because they have not thought about that question since they were kids, right?
No, they haven't.
We often don't. And I think, you know, perhaps, you know, there can be some blessings in the diagnoses like these, because they can help people recognize, okay, so I do need to look at what's going to support me, what's going to support my well-being.
Yes, right. Absolutely. But until we've actually gone inside ourselves, it can be very difficult to work that out. And then I get women that go, oh, I can't say that. I can't, you'll get the I can'ts come out.
Yeah.
And I go, actually, you know, from my perspective as an old bird, it's like, oh, yes, you can. And actually, if you don't start now in midlife, you've got no chance when you're older, right?
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things, like, you know, my partner, he's a morning person. He's an early morning person. I'm not an early morning person. So I've said to him, I'm not an early morning person. And actually, I like peace and quiet first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Just want to be quiet. you know.
So this is about setting boundaries, isn't it, really?
Exactly,
being able to respect your wishes and other people's and set the boundaries. Yes. But we're often not very good at that either.
No. No.
Particularly if you've been drinking for years. Let alone if you've got ADHD as well. If you've been drinking for years, you're often very bad at setting boundaries because you're on the back foot all the while anyway.
Yes.
And whatever it is you think you're going to ask for, part of you is thinking, oh, they'll just say that's because of the drink, you know. Mm. And we don't have enough self-esteem, many of us, when we're drinking, to be able to ask for what we need, if we even know what it is, which we often don't.
Which we often don't. You know, I always say that I lived most of my life feeling numb.
Yeah.
And that wasn't from alcohol. Oh, don't get me wrong. I enjoy drink. But, you know, my ex-husband's an alcoholic, so I have had experience of this. And when I look back, I realized that every time I would get in from my office, he'd have a drink ready waiting for me.
Mm.
And that would become part of my routine every day was, oh, yeah, right, okay, I can sit down for half an hour now with my drink.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't got the drink, what do you do then?
Mm.
It's like, and what gives you that, I don't know, just that kind of feeling of peace, really, and the relaxation. And so what I find with a lot of ADHD is they use alcohol in that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, they're not alcoholic or anything like that. They're not drinking during the day. But every evening they have a glass of wine or a gin and tonic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And then, of course, that ramps up, as we all know. I mean, I could talk to you for hours on end, obviously. But what would you say then? What are the baseline tips you want to give us? Obviously, nutrition is key.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I'm guessing you do you have a program or do you work with clients? Tell us how you work.
Yeah, so I work with clients. I have a 12-week program that I do with clients. If they, you know, a lot of midlife women, they're not very sure about stuff and they just want to dip their toe in the water. So I do offer a power hour so that they can experience how I work. They can leave with three key things that they can make changes with in the next month. Then they will often come back and go, okay, I'll do your 3-month program now.
Yeah. So typically that you would include, you know, nutrition, obviously. And what else would you be looking at? What are the other key factors? Is it, as we've discussed, those kind of lifestyle pieces?
A lot of it is those lifestyle pieces that we have talked about, but also I do a type of kind of depends on where they are.
Mm.
You have to meet people where they are, not where I think they are, but where they tell me they are. And, you know, so some of them have done a lot of work, what I call personal growth work. Some have not.
Yeah.
So those that have done a lot already, we can actually build on that. And do some more. So, and that a lot of that is around reconnection with self and dealing with our blocks and our fears.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Because actually it's mostly fear that blocks us. You know, what ifs?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know? And if you're someone who's got that anxiety and all the rest of it. So, I mean, would you recommend that someone, if there's someone listening to this, you know, and they maybe they're drinking more than they want to, and they're thinking, do you know what, I have got this going on. I know you'll say it's entirely up to you, but should they think about trying to get a diagnosis, or do you think it actually doesn't matter? What matters is getting the coping strategies, eating well, getting to live their best life, as it were. Is that what matters, or does the diagnosis also matter?
I don't feel that the diagnosis matters as much.
Right, because of exactly what I've just said.
Yes, because you need to be doing all the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you know that you're going to need or want to go the medication route, in which case you need the diagnosis.
Yes.
But I'm guessing you would say that, you know, even if someone were to be on the medication, surely you've still got to do the other stuff.
Yes, you do.
Because otherwise, you know, you've still got to support that, haven't you?
Yes, you do. So, I mean, I have had clients who I've worked with in the past who then have a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And because I've worked with them around their weight and their food and, you know, how much alcohol they're drinking and everything else. Then they have a diagnosis because they've suddenly thought, hang on a second, through all of this, maybe I have. Mm. And then they go, Oh, that explains it. Now it's all fitting together, right?
Right, right.
So, and some of the stuff that they didn't do when we were working together, they suddenly take it on board.
Yeah.
So,
really interesting.
You know, yeah, nothing is ever lost. Mm. I don't
believe. Do you think that what sort of percent can you put a percentage on it? Do you think there's a lot more people who are ADHD than know that they are, as it were?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
I don't think we've even touched the surface.
Why do you think that is? Do you think that percentage has got higher over time, or you know, 50 years ago would it have been the same?
I like to think it would be the same. However, I think that the traits become stronger and manifest more because of our diet and the lifestyle and the chemically toxic environment
exactly.
in which we live.
Exactly. It has to have had an impact, doesn't it? It can't not have done, I don't think.
And stress on top of that. So our brain is going, I don't know what to do with all of this. And that's where you
Even if you just add in, you know, if you think back, I don't know, 50 years or something, and you think of an adult then, and then you think back, you know, in however, you know, many years more recently, it's not only the changes in, you know, the food, which is huge changes, massive changes to the extent that a lot of the stuff that people eat isn't even food.
No, it isn't.
That's a conversation for another time.
No, that is,
not even
yes,
food.
Yes.
So
no,
the fact that we are consuming chemicals, not food. But then in addition to that, you've got all the EMFs, all the electromagnetic frequencies that are around us all the whole goddamn time. So if you've got an over-buzzing brain, you add that into the picture. And it's not surprising, is it, that kids can't sit still, for God's sake. I mean, we have very little that actually grounds us, to go back to what we were saying. Whereas if you think about a kid many years, I have a really lovely friend who, when we home edited our kids for the first few years, and she ran a lovely little kind of small school, and all they did was go out and climb trees and build dens.
Yeah.
And then after they'd done that for a full morning, she'd get them to come in. She'd make them a really nutritious meal, or they would cook their own really nutritious meal. And then she'd say, fancy doing a page of maths? And she'd get like the best results out of them because they were properly grounded, you know.
Yes.
So the differences are incredible, I suppose.
Yes.
We could talk for hours, couldn't we?
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah. Totally.
Give us your website then.
So it will be called theadhdhealthcoach.com.
Okay. Thank you so much. You've been an amazing guest. I really appreciate
You're welcome.
It. Thank you.
It's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And just a reminder then that if you are a Sober Club member, that interview and the exclusive Q&A that we did with Carol, with Sober Club members, will be in the member portal. And there's also a PDF around good nutrition for ADHD as well, which is actually very useful for all of us. And of course, I'll put Carol's details in the show notes of the podcast. Always reach out if you're struggling, whatever's going on with you. Perhaps it isn't ADHD. Perhaps it isn't even the drinking anymore. Perhaps it's something else. But you know what? Don't hole up and do it on your own, because as Carol kind of alluded to, people have so much, there's so many different things. Perhaps, you know, the whole neurodiversity thing, that's the word, it's diversity. People are diverse and they have so many different things going on. But just because you don't necessarily fit the same box as somebody else does not mean that you have to struggle, you know, in silence. There's such a beauty in numbers and in just sharing what's going on, because there will always be someone else who's had a similar experience, or, you know, who knows how to kind of lead the way for you. We all need someone a little bit ahead of us, all of us. So please reach out, whatever's going on. And if I can't offer support, I'll try and signpost you somewhere where you can get support. So you know where to find me, thesoberclub.com, at Janie Lee Grace across social media. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all of that. I'm everywhere on there. Just another reminder, Family Constellations, Friday, 12th of May in Hertfordshire. That's a small group from 11 till 4. And a longer day in York on Saturday, the 20th of May. And that's 10:30 to 5:30. And you'll find all of those details at thesoberclub.com/events. And you'll also find the link there to register for the Sober Guys Talking Zoom session, which is also Friday the 12th in the evening, 7:45. That's open to Sober Club members. It's completely free, but you do just have to register to get that link. So I hope you have a great bank holiday weekend. Don't get, you know, swayed into thinking the sun's out, if it is. It might, may not be. And oh, it's bank holiday, so I'll just have one. No, you're worth it. You really are worth it. And you absolutely don't want to have one. Why would you want one? Why would you want any? It's toxic poison. Forget about it. Focus on doing something else. Stay connected. Get yourself connected. Go and do something that lifts your spirits, even if for a short time. Because, you know, alcohol sure as hell is a depressant. It will do you no good whatsoever. You've heard me say this stuff. Check out the Sober Club. You'll find lots and lots more about this. And make sure you have a great weekend. And I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.